The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases.
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
The NFL is set to release its schedule at 8 p.m. on Thursday night. Is that a mistake? No. The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on ESPN News. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776. Coming up in this hour, I did a podcast with our old buddy Cerruti. Got into, if I could have dinner with three people in media, who would I choose that to be? And why does everybody hate me on social media? That's all coming up a little bit later here on The Will Cain Show, as is the director of The Last Dance, the documentary on ESPN featuring Michael Jordan in the last year of the Chicago Bulls dynasty. We'll talk about Jason Hare, about what it's like to interview Michael Jordan. Is it as intense as it was to play with Michael Jordan? That's coming up in a little bit here also on The Will Cain Show. But with the NFL scheduled to release its 2020 schedule, later this week, Peter Burns, our friend and the host of The Best Week Ever on ESPN Radio, suggested this is not a wise move by the NFL, that this is a mistake to release this schedule. Listen to Peter Burns.
This is what's going to happen, that the NFL is going to release their schedule, okay? It's going to come out. We'll talk to Jeremy Fowler here in a couple of minutes about that. And people are going to go, well, look at that. The NFL says we're starting on September the whatever. That it is just normal. And guess what? They're going to think that the NFL now has brand new information that says, you know what? Oh, this thing's getting better. This thing is absolutely getting better. And I think they're going to be hurting their own cause. If anything, if the NFL truly wants to be on time and to have this day, you don't release the schedule. You're going to say that everything is still on air.
That's Peter Burns, the host of The Best Week Ever, suggesting it's a mistake for the NFL to release its schedule later this week. I disagree with Peter Burns, and I'm going to tell you why, coming up a little bit later here on The Will Cain Show. But on our phone lines now is the director of The Last Dance. It's Jason Hare. Jason, nice to meet you. Thanks for jumping on the show today.
My pleasure, man. Nice to meet you, too.
So I think my first question for you is going to be this. Watching Michael Jordan, modern-day Michael Jordan, in this documentary, brings up some questions. I've done some long-form pieces for E60, for Outside the Lines. I've done some of these interviews that you sit down for, like, in our cases, an hour or two, and then condense down into 10 minutes once it's on air. You've got 10 parts, 10 hours. First, how long did you sit and interview Michael Jordan over several settings for this documentary?
It was three separate interviews that took place in June 2018, May 2019. In fact, tomorrow is the one-year anniversary of our second interview with him when he's in that maroon shirt, and then December 2019. There's three separate interviews in a total of 8 hours that we interviewed him.
How was it sitting down with Michael Jordan for 8 hours over, well, it's almost a two-year period, where you're talking to him? I mean, we see all the intensity he approaches practice and teammates with. You're sitting down to interview him, and you have to challenge a subject. You got to follow up. You can't be deferential. How is it interviewing Michael Jordan over 8 hours?
Fun. I hate to use such a simple word for it, but honestly, it's a dream job. You know, these are some of them are questions that I wanted to ask as a 43-year-old filmmaker, and we want to be sure that we check all the boxes of a responsible documentary and tackle all the subjects that people want us to tackle. And then some are questions that I frankly just wanted to ask since I was 9 years old about certain games and certain moments in his career. So it's definitely a challenge, but I say that in a positive way. It's a challenge to keep him occupied. As you said, you have to ask follow-ups and do all the things that a normal interviewer would do, but he's been asked every single possible question that he could be asked. I mean, he's been doing this for over 30 years now, 35 years he's been sitting down for these interviews. So to try and find a way to keep him occupied, to keep his attention, to keep him stimulated and engaged, that was as fun a challenge as anything else. And then, you know, it's years of research that go into sitting down with him, and it's urgent. It's you know, the equivalent for him would be like, this is my NBA finals, because we don't, you can't be off your game and have access to a guy like that. We have limited access to him. He was only contracted actually for two interviews, and he gave us a third. But if he comes in on that first day and I'm not on my game, and he leaves and we haven't gotten what we need out of him, or he just wasn't engaged and wasn't locked in, the documentary is going to suffer greatly for it. So we got very, very lucky in a lot of ways that we had everything down to the right weather, to however he played golf earlier that day. He just, he came in a good mood and he came ready to be engaged with us. And then just, it's a matter of preparation and relying on everyone on my team to be sure that I go in there as prepped as I can.
And you did all the interviews, all 8 hours with Michael Jordan. Was that you asking the questions?
It is.
And so the biggest challenge, and I know you just said this, but I want to clarify, I find the process fascinating. The biggest challenge is keeping him engaged. Like he said, oh, I've answered this question 10 times throughout my career, 100 times, thousands of times throughout my career. How do I do it in a newer, fresh way? Or was it, I would think intimidation would play a big role as well. Like, how much can I press him? Is he kind of staring at me in a way that says, shut this down? Or probably even saying at times, shut this down, I don't want to go down this road.
He never did that. He certainly never said we couldn't discuss any topics. He was willing to play, and I think that's part of the challenge for him and the game for him, is that he knows that certain people probably aren't expecting him to go certain places, and he's willing to go wherever you want to go. He only shut down once and asked for a break, and that was because he got emotional after a certain question that I asked him, and you'll see that in episode 7 next week. But otherwise, yeah, it's not just asking questions in a fresh way that he's already been asked before. It's just natural human nature to sit there and talk to anybody for 3 hours. You're going to start to drift. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had to kind of sense, you know, keep with the game plan that I had, because there's certain things that we needed to get out of every single interview in order for us to go back and edit these episodes. You know, my editors are waiting for content, so I have to bring that back to them and say, okay, we discussed the 89 Cavaliers series here, so we can start editing that scene. We discussed the 91 finals against the Lakers here, we can start doing that. So we had to really be buttoned up with exactly what our goals were going in, and you don't just go in there and sit there and have a conversation and hope that it's going to work within the 10 hours. It's very, very structured and tactical. But at the same time, you're trying to keep him occupied and keep him engaged. So that's where that iPad came into play, was handing him that, because that was almost a toy that I could pull out if I saw him starting to drift or his voice started to get a little bit lower and his energy started to lapse a little bit. I could pull that out and not even tell him what he was about to watch. It was kind of a game for him. So anything with a game for Michael is going to get more out of a non-game scenario. So just trying to keep it fun for him and trying to keep it different and engaging the whole time.
Oh, I love the tool of the iPad. I was going to bring that up without you even mentioning it just now, because that's where you seem to get a lot of authenticity out of him. Natural kid-like reaction. When it came to talking about Gary Payton, like the laughter and then the dismissiveness and then the grudge with Isaiah Thomas. You can show me whatever you're going to show me. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to change my opinion. I mean, I love the tool of it, because it seemed to push him towards, and I'm not suggesting it wasn't authentic in other places, but it seemed unfiltered in those moments. And that seems to be something, though, you didn't really have to, and I'm not trying to put myself in your shoes or say what was easier, what was hard, but it's, and everybody's talking about this week, he seems to hold on to grudges. He seems to hold on to those sentiments. I mean, he talked about hating Isaiah Thomas in the present tense, not in the past tense. And that always seems fresh when you're talking to him.
True, but you're still going to get a more visceral, honest response out of him if you actually show him, whether it's Isaiah's face and voice or Gary Payton's or Reggie Miller's or Dolores Jordan's, his mother's. He doesn't know me. So me sitting there and just reading a paragraph that someone has told me from a transcript of an earlier interview is not going to have nearly the reaction that if I hand him, if I can do my best to bring this person into the room, you know, electronically, that's going to get a much bigger reaction out of him, especially someone who, as you said, you know, still feels the visceral competitiveness when he sees some of these guys' faces. So, you know, with Payton, he lit up. You'll see in later episodes, Reggie Miller, you know, and there's other figures, right? Right up until we use that technique right up until the final minutes of the entire series. So it was tremendously valuable. And because, as I said, he does not know me, and I've only known him for a handful of hours in my life. So it's not going to garner the same response. And if we can get those people to talk to him as directly as we can.
Jason Hare, the director of The Last Dance, obviously the 10-part documentary series airing on ESPN right now. Through all the interviews, and I won't limit you to Michael Jordan. Obviously, we know you talked to Scottie Pippen, Phil Jackson, Horace Grant, on and on. And all the interviews that you did, do you have one moment you can point to as the most surprising moment? You walked away, I can't believe he just said that, or that was just revealed. What was the most surprising thing for you in this process?
Well, specifically, I'd say the most enlightening moment came early in Michael's first interview, and you saw it in the first episode. It was only 15 or 20 minutes into his first interview when I was asking him about, I told him that one writer had referred to those early Bulls teams as the Chicago Bulls traveling cocaine circus. The laughter that elicited, I had never heard that laugh out of Michael. In all the tape that I've watched and all the documentaries I've seen about him, even the limited time that I'd spent with him before that, I'd never heard him laugh like that before. And he very easily could have bobbed and weaved through that question and said, yeah, well, that was a crazy time, and not offered anything else. The mere fact that he laughed like that acknowledged that it was true. And then for him to turn around and calm down from laughing and offer us that anecdote that he gave us about his experience as a kid coming from Dean Smith's program at Chapel Hill and seeing those things he saw in that hotel room in Peoria, that's gold no matter who you're talking to. But to get it out of your main character in a 10-hour documentary, and for that main character to be one of the most significant figures in pop culture of my lifetime, that was the moment that everything clicked. And I thought, you know what, this might be more about Michael Jordan, the person, even than Michael Jordan, the basketball player.
Taking Michael Jordan out of your options, who was the most fun for you to interview in this entire process?
Most fun. Horace Grant was a lot of fun. Horace lives up the coast in California, and we had done a ton of interviews in L.A., and a lot of these things are grueling because budgetarily we have to get through three or four of them per day. But we couldn't do that with Horace because it took so long for us to drive up there. We drove up. It was a gorgeous day. And with my producer, Jake Rogal, who's been at my side for all 106 of these interviews, and he's booked all of them himself. So, and it was, we thought at that point it was going to be one of our final interviews, certainly the final West Coast stuff. And Horace got there before we did. He was already, he had a couple of friends of his, and he knew all the guys in that part of town, and he was kind of reminiscing with them, and he came in a great mood. And I don't know what I expected out of him, but I certainly didn't expect this gregarious storyteller that we got in Horace. Interviewing Steve Kerr was tremendous. He's just such a thoughtful, incisive, intelligent guy. He was in between games in New York. They were playing the Nets and the Knicks on a Friday and Sunday. So on Saturday afternoon, he had an off day, and we interviewed him at his hotel. That was memorable. Steve Kerr's mom, you'll see in episode 9. The moms in this specifically, you know, Dolores Jordan and Ann Kerr were so impressive. And the stories that they told and the candor that they told him with were so impressive to me. So Phil Jackson, we show up at Phil Jackson's house, and I don't even think he knew we were coming that day. And it's a very, very out-of-the-way place, so it's not the kind of place you say, all right, we'll come back next week. Like, we had to do it that day. We had a whole camera crew. We had flown in and all that, and somehow the word did not get to him properly that we were showing up that day. And Phil ended up giving us 5.5 hours in his backyard. So sitting in this gorgeous backyard in the middle of Montana, which is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been, talking to Phil Jackson about the history of the NBA, his history in the NBA, those old Knicks teams, and then his path from the CBA to those Puerto Rican leagues that he talked about all the way through his Bulls tenure. I mean, there's so many fascinating interviews here. I grew up as a Celtics fan in the 80s as a kid. So Bird was, you know, God to us. And Bird and Magic were, you know, God and I don't want to say the devil for Magic, but it was his rival. I grew up pretending I was playing against Magic Johnson in my backyard. So to be sitting there talking to him and asking him about these things that I experienced as a kid, it was a thrill. I'm really, really lucky.
Talking to Jason Hare, the director of The Last Dance here on The Will Cain Show. I just have two more for you, Jason. I think the main voice that I know I would like to hear that isn't in the documentary, and that's because it's impossible, is the voice of Jerry Krause, other than archival footage. You'd love to hear his response to some of the things that are said about him. But outside of Jerry Krause, is there one person, you said 106 interviews. I mean, geez, that's comprehensive and that's a ton. But is there one you didn't get that you really wanted, you just couldn't get somebody to sit down for an interview that you thought was important to the story?
Well, you mentioned Jerry, obviously he'd be my number one, and we couldn't get him for obvious reasons. Along those same lines is James Jordan. I know how fascinating it was to interview Michael's mom about his formative years, but James Jordan, the reason you get the Michael you get today is James Jordan back then. As far as you know, former players or coaches, we did get a handful of no's when we reached out. Not many, not much more than two or three. But I can't really pinpoint someone who would have made a difference. There's no story that I regret the way we told it. I think that we're as responsible and comprehensive as we could be. So it's those people who are no longer with us. Jerry Krause, though, really stands out because I want to tell as give as full a picture of what was going on back then as possible. And obviously Jerry was at the root of all of this. So I would have loved to have asked him my own questions instead of relying on the sound that we had archivally. But we did the best with what we had.
And the last thing I want to ask you, in when you have 10 hours to tell a story, I think a lot of people would be shocked by this, but I'm 100% sure it's true. So I feel comfortable asking you. There's something you left out that you really wish you couldn't, you didn't have to. There's some story. You have a favorite story that didn't make, that got left on the cutting room floor. I know you do. What is it?
You know who was gold was Roy Williams. When you asked who's the most fun to interview, he may have been, he's right up there because he's like right out of central casting with that southern accent and that kind of like this avuncular old college coach. He was the guy who recruited Michael at UNC. So he knew the Jordan family really well. He knew the parents really well. And in the course of Michael's recruitment to UNC, Michael's dad built him a wood-burning stove with his bare hands. Michael's dad put the second story of their house. He built the second story of their one-level house with his bare hands himself, ripped the roof off, and there was a tarp over Michael's room. It was freezing cold and rain hitting the tarp as James Jordan is taking weeks, if not months, to build the second story of their house in Wilmington, North Carolina. So Roy told the story of how Mr. Jordan shows up with this wood stove on a truck out of nowhere, rings his doorbell, and this is in the process of Michael being recruited. It's one thing for a coach to be giving you something, but for the recruit to be giving the coach something, that's just how generous a guy James was and how much he appreciated how kind Roy Williams was. And Roy was a part-time coach at that point. I think he was earning like $8,000 a year to coach at UNC. So James Jordan shows up, and he's got this huge wood stove on his truck, and he said, "I need your help to get it inside your house." And Roy said, "I can't accept that. I'm sure this violates some sort of rule." And Mr. Jordan said, "Listen, it took me a lot of time to build this thing. It took me a lot of time to get it on the truck and drive it all the way out to your house. I'm going to be really upset if you make me drive back to my house with this stove that I built for you." So the next thing you know, they're installing it in the house. And Roy Williams, years later, he's selling his house. And one of the potential buyers is coming through and says, "That's a beautiful stove. Is that a Fisher?" He says, "No, that's Jordan."
I would rip that stove out of the house and take it with me to wherever I was moving.
It should be in the Smithsonian.
I appreciate you sharing that with us. It's a lot of fun every Sunday night to sit down and relive these moments. I'm sure it was a lot of fun putting this together, a lot of work too, Jason. Thanks for jumping on the show today and telling us a little bit about the process, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that's the director of The Last Dance, Jason Hare, here on The Will Cain Show. The Last Dance continues this Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. And listen to Jalen Jacoby's After Show podcast featuring Jason Hare every Sunday night, immediately after the show. Listen to Jalen Jacoby, The After Show, on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Nuno, Bubba, let's react to that. Do we want to take a quick break and then react to it, or do we want to do it here? Help me out with the clock. What's the right decision? What do we do?
Probably
here?
Want to hit the old break.
Okay, Bubba, our devoted clock watcher says now's the time to take a break. We'll come back, we'll review what we just learned about The Last Dance and Michael Jordan. And coming up, I did a podcast with our old buddies Cerruti and Smallman, and they asked me, A lot of questions, like why does everybody hate me? You'll hear the answer coming up on The Will Cain Show.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Let's break down what we just heard from the director of The Last Dance, Jason Hare. Plus, I jumped on a podcast where our old buddy Cerruti and our old friend Michelle Smallman asked me some interesting questions. Like, who would I invite to dinner? That's all coming up on The Will Cain Show.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with GEICO? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
I have a trade proposal for somebody on the show, and they've already shot it down. He don't know football. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. The Korea Baseball Organization has officially begun their season, and you can catch the games on ESPN2. The next game will be tomorrow morning, 5:30 a.m. Eastern Time on ESPN2 with Carl Ravitch and Eduardo Perez on the call. I'll tell you what, I'm going to lay out this trade idea in just a moment. But let's break down for a second, if we can. Well, we just heard from Jason Hare, the director of The Last Dance, the documentary series on ESPN, about the last year of the Chicago Bulls dynasty and Michael Jordan. I'll tell you this. I asked him what the toughest part was. I wanted to ask him all about the process. I love interviewing people. And you know I've been doing more of that. Tom Herman, Wade Phillips, and others, which we'll be adding to on the Will Cain Show podcast feed. I love the process. To me, an interview is not unlike a debate. A conversation is not unlike a debate. And that's not, oh, here's Will being adversarial again. It's more like a ping pong match, right? It's like, how can you keep advancing this in an interesting way? That's the way a debate should go. It's a process of listening and responding. And in the whole game of it all, like learning or winning, but always advancing. And that's an interview as well. I love doing stuff for E60 and Outside the Lines when I did that. I love sitting down with the subject and thinking, what did he just say? How can I follow that up? What's interesting about that? It's just part of the game for me. And to hear Jason Hare talk about interviewing 106 different people for that documentary and 8 hours with Michael Jordan, I'll tell you this, it had to have played a role. I tried to really push him on it, but intimidation with Michael Jordan had to have played a big role. I mean, he's an incredibly intimidating figure. And if you want that to be any damn good, you gotta push him. You gotta challenge him, you know? You gotta get something authentic out of him. Obviously, I think we get that at various moments in The Last Dance. I think the tool of showing him the iPad clips of Gary Payton or Isaiah Thomas is an awesome tool to do that. Before I move on, did you have anything, Nuno, you wanted to say, biggest takeaway, Nuno or Bubba?
No, I just appreciate what he said about my boy Roy Williams, because, you know, as a Carolina fan, like, I loved Roy, and in that first episode, he was great, and I just think we need to see more of him, and it's kind of sad that because it's only 10 hours that there's not more of Roy Williams in these episodes.
I'm sure there was some good stuff left on the cutting room floor. I mean, 10 hours, you're like, what? You got all that? No, I'm sure there's some good stuff. And I'm sure there's, I wonder who was a bust. Like, who did you think you were going to interview? And they brought nothing to the table. I wonder who that was. And I do want to know who those two or three people that said no and why. Like, who's conspicuously missing? Mike A. Bubba, is it Bill Laimbeer, or does Isaiah Thomas cover that Detroit Pistons angle?
Bill Laimbeer was on it for a minute, wasn't he?
Was it Laimbeer?
Or maybe that was just get up the next morning.
I don't remember Lambert in the documentary. Yeah, I don't
remember him. That was one of the things I was fascinated by, like you were saying, is, A, yeah, how much was, you know, how much is still just not out there because there's so much was interviewed. But, yeah, who said no? Who were the
how about
three
Oakley?
People?
Was, oh, know. Charles Oakley is missing from this, isn't he?
Yeah.
And isn't he buddies with Michael Jordan?
Yeah,
they were close.
Like
he said
friend,
that
yeah.
they were like, yeah, they were really close, especially in the beginning, and they had to trade Charles Oakley or get rid of Charles Oakley in order to build the team they had, which was a controversial move at the time. So I'm wondering why we haven't heard from him.
Yeah,
maybe
Charles Oakley is missing. Hey, Barkley showed up in this latest one, and there was a original source interview with Barkley, right? Just refresh my memory. Didn't they have a sit down with Charles Barkley?
I don't remember ever seeing Barkley on the doc. See, it gets so jumbled because we watch it Sunday night, and then Monday everybody's
I know,
reacting
I feel like
to
I've
it
seen
with
Barkley
get up
I
and
know.
That sometimes I can't remember where I saw the actual quote.
You know what I'm fascinated by is what is the status of Barkley and Jordan's friendship now? Because weren't they really tight and then they had a bit of a falling out? Didn't something like that happen? And
yeah, Barkley
believe,
criticized his management style, you know, his front office position.
That's right.
And Jordan does not obviously take it well, and he basically cut him off. And I don't think they ever really fixed it. And yeah, they were like great friends and it stopped.
Yeah, that's, like I wonder
you,
if that
you literally cannot cross him in any way at all.
Well, but that's wild, but that's Charles's job. Like, what does that mean, cross him in any way? You know.
Yeah, and it was accurate too. It's not like.
I know.
You know, his team was terrible.
Nuno, I sent you that article today from the Philadelphia Inquirer, Mike Sielski, who I read sometimes. That was about Jordan, right? And how he comes off in this. That's what that was about, wasn't it?
Correct. It was, and specifically how he's treating, he's always treated Jerry Krause.
That's right. And so I want to get him on the show maybe tomorrow because he said Jordan, you know, really kind of comes off poorly in all this because he's such a grudge carrier. And he talked about his Hall of Fame speech and the way he kept going to Jerry Krause and that hall. You know, a lot of people had criticism for Jordan's Hall of Fame speech. You know, that whole thing about you can't cross him, Bubba, that's the balance I'm talking about when you're interviewing him. Like, you have to challenge him. You have to be like, but you also got to get a 10-hour documentary out of him too. So, like, you can't burn it in the first episode, or the first interview, sit down with him and be like, so let's start with your Bobcats tenure. We can't.
I mean, I guess, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I guess it's a little different too than maybe just asking questions than straight out criticizing you, but yeah. Obviously
some people react to questions just the same way they do criticism. What Barkley said, apparently, Nuno's got up on my screen here, is that that Jordan needed to stop hiring friends. Let me go to Mike in DC real quick. What's up, Mike?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I really enjoy the show. Oftentimes, it's the most enjoyable half hour of my day. It's unfortunate I only get a half hour a day near the radio.
Thanks, Mike. I was
mentioning to the, I'm not sure who answered my call, but I wanted to make sure that you guys hadn't forgotten White Squall in your C movies, because I really think it's something that that you and your kids would enjoy listening or watching. A great movie, and it brought to mind that you might want to think about a category of movies at some point that are just Jeff Bridges movies.
Well, that one's a slam dunk. That's the Big Lebowski. All right, Mike, I appreciate the call. I appreciate you listening to us, spending part of your day with us. I'm a big Jeff Bridges fan. I mean, Crazy Heart, it's escaping, dang, the Larry McMurtry book.
Yeah, big fan.
Famous old
school. Hold on a second. Big Lebowski, slam dunk, Jeff Bridges movie?
Ooh.
Slam dunk. What are you going to put in there, Starman? Like, what's in the running? True Grit? I bet it's a remake, and it's good, but did you ever see Crazy Heart? That's a great character he plays in that.
Hell or High Water?
Oh, that's
Take
a good
that.
One.
That's Take one my, that.
Yeah.
Use your
but
own
doesn't
thing
beat the dude.
You.
No, the dude is iconic. The dude is maybe the greatest character in cinematic history. I mean, what are you going to do?
You got a lot of people that say it is, and you got a lot of people, you know, the rest of the population that say, nah.
Yeah, I mean, I won, so I'll worry about the category, but thanks.
Okay. All right. So, Bubba, you have until Friday to set the category. Hey, I went on a podcast with our old buddy Steve Cerruti and Michelle Smallman, and they asked me some good questions. Who would I invite to a dinner party, and why does social media hate me? I'm going to play some of that. We'll address that coming up on The Will Cain Show.
The Will Cain Show.
Drew in Ontario.
You always reference the Lebowski, and you never get any of your references right, so it makes it questionable if you've ever seen the movie. And any of your points are questionable after that.
You're a d***.
More coming up.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
This is The Will Cain Show.
Well, the truth is actually it's just sort of boring. It's not that funny.
All right. Well, to you.
Sorry. You're right, to me.
Actually, really funny to us.
You're also a coward, not, by the way.
I'm a coward!
You're a coward. Because you come in here every single... You're right. You come in here every single segment. You burp in everyone's face, which is absurd. You talk our ears off. You talk ass and then don't pay attention to our responses. But when things are actually going down in the control room, you're nowhere to be found.
Nowhere to be found. Wow.
He is getting some things off his chest.
Wow.
All right. I feel that was healthy. I feel good about that.
Yeah, now I feel better.
This is The Will Cain Show.
That was the infamous Nuno wedding Cerruti blow-up. This is The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier. They'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. I got some breaking news here I'm going to give you in just a moment. Our old boy Cerruti has a podcast with our friend Michelle Smallman now, and they invited me to come on their podcast, and they asked me a whole host of questions, including why I'm so popular on social media. It's no reflection of the real world. We've all learned that. They did ask me about that. I'm going to play a little bit of that conversation right now.
If I told you that it didn't bother me, as much time as we spent together, Cerruti, you would call BS on me so fast because you know the truth. I mean, of course it bothers me. I will say this, it bothers me, but it doesn't change who I am. I'm not going to change what I say or what I think based upon it. That's just, it's not me being bold or strong. It's just I have that incapability. I'm not going to change because you called me a name. I might double down, and that's not healthy, by the way, either. That's not good because I'm still just being reactionary. But, you know, it does bother me. Here's what I told somebody. It's funny you bring this up because I had a conversation about this morning. It didn't have to do with sports media, but it had to do with Twitter in general. I said, for anybody that basically has my bearing in life, and I don't even think this is necessarily a right-left thing, I think it's, as you said, Cerruti, simply doesn't go along with what's cool or groupthink on Twitter. For anybody that has that bearing, Twitter particularly, and social media in general, is an away game. I'm always playing away games. I never get a home game, and I'm usually spotting the other team 21 points. What that means is, they come in with preconceptions, formed opinions, lunchroom, mean girl table consensus. And for me to try to get understood or convince somebody simply that I'm not a tool, like you said, it's a massive feat. Like, I can't. And then I step back and I go, why do you even care? Because the truth is, Rudy, like, all those people you're talking about, I don't really like them anyway. So why am I worried about being accepted by them? And so I am frustrated because I think the most frustrating thing in life, I really do think this, or at least it is for me, is to be misunderstood. And I do think I'm misunderstood. I don't think people know what I believe, much less the kind of guy I am. So, yeah, it bothers me in the end.
That was the question of whether or not Twitter hate, social media hate, because it was genuinely or generally acknowledged that I'm not the most popular dude in that environment. Bothers me, and it does. Now, Nuno, you thought that was a little woe is me. Is that what you wanted to say today?
Well, there's a couple of things, and Bubba's going to help me out here. So when you told us you went on this podcast, one of the questions that Cerruti asked you, our previous fearless leader, was what did one thing he did that annoyed you, right? And you're like, oh, I can't think. And I, being me, being real, authentic, jumped in and said, oh, like the way he defended Ryan Russillo, whatever I said, right? So I was listening to the podcast today, and you made this comment to Cerruti, Go ahead, Bubba, to your hero.
And you know what's funny is your hero, Russillo, does it a little bit too. So that's kind of maybe something you learn from him.
What are you talking about? Like,
so when you – and that was when you were doing the whole, like, like when things you don't like that bothered you, that Cerruti bothered you. I got killed for saying how Cerruti always – I don't know if it was defend Russillo or whatever. And you took a shot at him in the podcast.
I did not say you were alone on that. I didn't crush you on that. Cerruti asked me what about him.
No, but everyone else did. That's my problem with you. I always defend you. But everyone else, Bubba was killing me. And I don't know if it was Mike Gay or Pat was killing me. And instead of defending me, like you could have been like, nah, he's right. You just allowed these heathens to attack me.
Nonsense. First of all, here's how that went down for anybody listening. Cerruti asked me on that podcast what's the most annoying thing about him. And I struggled because I'm not Michael Jordan. I don't hold grudges. I don't remember negatives. And I said, I did come up with an answer, Nuno. I said it was his millennial dismissiveness, that anything I said he disagreed with, then I was ultimately uncool then. And you go, well, I would have had something right away. I think Bubba and Nuno, Mike A can attest to that. And we were like, wow, Nuno, quick on the draw on what annoyed him about Cerruti. And you fired off the Russillo thing. He had it locked and loaded, Mike. He did. And I didn't say you were wrong. I made fun of Cerruti for his Russillo worship to his face on that.
I would just appreciate you defending me every once in a while when I'm attacked by the heathens that work on your show.
I defend you.
Look out
all
for
the
me.
Time.
When someone says you work with Will Kane, I'm like, yeah, but he's not like he seems.
Well, that's not defending me. That's throwing me under the bus.
I did that on purpose. As we're getting out,
I've got more sound from that. That's going to highlight that conversation.
Thank you for listening to the Will Kane Podcast. You can listen to The Will Kane Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Kane Podcast.